conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes, so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andyscrolls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions. Just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code AndyScrolls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com. with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine.
My lease is going up $400, but my clavis is priceless, plus $400.
I may not be dripping in labels and glam, but honey, I'm debt-free. And that makes me richer than most housewives. Because when Rena said...
Wait for the hammer.
Because when Rena said own it, she didn't mean her house.
Wait, that is the Galley Guinness Book of World Records.
Put it in there.
Can you just read that one more time? Because it was sure. A delightful little monologue. Do it one more time.
Sure. Imagine me like flipping the skirt of a gown, turning to the camera and saying, I may not be dripping in labels and glam, but honey, I'm debt-free. And that makes me richer than most housewives. Because when Rinna said own it, she didn't mean her house.
Oh, my God. You know who would approve of that, judging by the last 10 minutes of Atlanta? Marlo Hampton, a woman who loves herself a monologue. And we love she it, does. Guys. I know I already love this episode. It's AG327. Shout out to my birthday, by the way.
Oh,
also
happy birthday.
No, it's not today. But my birthday is March 27th, along with Mariah Carey, less important than OG of the OC, Vicky Gumbelson. Victoria G and I share a blessed.
Wow.
It brings me such annoyance.
I bet.
That Vicky and I share a birthday, but Shannon's birthday is the day before. And Shannon and I couldn't share a birthday, but Vicky and I do. I'm Yikes. Very upset about it. But anyway, you guys, it's Andy's Girls 327. Happy spiritual birthday to all Aries. And I'm so excited to have a repeat guest. I just truly... There's something about her voice that I find so soothing. It's like when you say things to me, I honestly like, not that my heart rate needs to go lower, because I think that's probably a thing, but like it really does make, and you know, the world is melting down and it's hot.
It is.
But it feels like a little bit of spiritual AC, which I'm here for. You know her as an incredible content creator on Instagram and beyond. Her bio, sort of a window into her spirit and her mission online. If Dateline and SportsCenter had a Bravo baby. Well, guys, cheers to this bambino. Welcome back to Andy's Girls. Bravo, Bravo, ducking, Bravo.
Hello, how are you? And first of all, I'm going to take that whole section and I'm going to send it to the Calm app and hopefully get some voiceover work.
I mean, you do. Nice? Have you been told that you just really do have an incredibly soothing voice?
I've never been told that until I started this account, and then a few people would message me occasionally and be like, your voice is very soothing. And I never had heard that before, but I was always picked in school to read to like younger kids, and so maybe it's from that, from like holding a book and reading to younger kids. I don't know.
You know, I do have to say shout out to my elementary school teachers who whenever we had the little like paper book play, I always gal over here raise my hand, but I was strategic. Yes. I would first look through and be like, which has the most words? Beep, 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 like raising hand. Oh, I got that part and this one and yada yada. An absolute sociopath from elementary school beyond.
I love it.
How are you? How are you feeling? Is it schwitzing wherever you are? Record temps all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. I'm East Coast. I'm in the swamp. Like it's very, very hot. It's oppressive heat. And let's take a moment and appreciate the coolest summer for the rest of our lives, as we also complain about the heat. And so that's fun. And yeah, I wish I had a pool. But you know, what are you gonna do about it? I'll just spray myself with a hose and keep on going.
Some East Coast mentality. While those really West is. Coasters with their like delightful aquatic accoutrement, and we're like, anybody got a hose?
Yeah, can somebody anywhere? Just a well water hose just hose me down real quick? Okay. Ice from the
so
ground.
Gross.
Yeah.
We don't have any of those $1,300 ice deliveries like on Dubai. We've got a tray if you're lucky. Okay.
If you're
fortunate, you've got yourself an ice cube tray. I have to say, I got an air conditioner for my living room. I've lived in my apartment for over a decade. I know. Here's the thing about me. I've got a lot of contradiction in terms of like how I look at money. None of
me
it is
too.
Good.
Sarah, mine is so odd. I made my own mayonnaise today. Okay. That's how shrewd
that's
I am with a couple of things, but you don't know how
I don't
to make
know
your
that
mayonnaise?
I would. I don't think that, first off, dairy's not good for my tum, but like, I don't think
there's
that.
There's no dairy in mayonnaise.
Is it just hatred then? What's in it? It's bad. I had a bad experience with my, may her memory be a blessing, my Italian Catholic grandmother, Grandma Galley, when I was younger. She made me a bologna and mayo sandwich when I was a
Delicious.
Small child.
Is there mustard on it?
there was mayo. I don't do bologna or mayo. This is before the vegetarian era began. And I was like, I don't think I want this. And she said, you know, I put extra mayo.
Oh, Lord. So that stuck in there.
And I have been, and I got very upset. She was upset at me for refusing to eat it. I think there was like a tiff between my mother and my grandmother as a result. This is my dad's, essentially dad's stepmother. But I mayonnaise scares me. I don't go near it. I don't trust it. I do a vegan mayo. I'll do an avocado oil mayo.
Okay. All right. Well, my mayonnaise that I made today was an herbed mayonnaise and it was avocado oil based. So I got that going for me, but we'll move on from it. I'll keep that inside.
I mean, I just have to say shout out to fellow people who have been grievously harmed in their childhoods by the misunderstanding of what mayo is until the point of no return, especially if you were raised in part by Catholic grandmothers and know that they do not, like many cultural icons, they do not fuck around with you refusing to eat food. Like,
yeah,
I'm from a SpaghettiOs culture. Like, bring me my SpaghettiOs with my like crunchy Italian bread on the side. Do not Pasco. Do not collect $200 or, you know, whatever else. I don't deal well with that. But I do have to say that, like, with money, I have never made sense. Like anything that was apartment, like people who spend money on cars, not just because I live in New York City, so we don't have to deal with them, but like I've never understood it. I'm like, buy the shittiest. What? It's not like it's shoes. It's not like it matters. Like this was the first year that I had my beautiful, now beautiful apartment designed, like truly don't understand it. But when I first moved into this apartment over a decade ago, I didn't get an air conditioner. My roommate had to force me to get an AC because I just didn't understand the point of spending like $150 on something that will drastically improve your quality of life and possible health. And I just got an air conditioner for my living room.
It's the best.
I mean, someone has to install it, and I don't know that it's going to – I never thought that you're supposed to measure.
Okay, stuff. Okay, listen, after this call – after we're done with the podcast part of it, I want you to show me the air conditioner. I've installed some air conditioners in my day. I just want to see what kind you have. We'll see. You'll have to send me a picture or let me see it afterwards.
Okay, so I got – shout out, this is not sponsored – Windmill, which is supposed to be thanks to my beloved interior designer, Angel Studio Piccolo, I was advised to get Windmill. They were out of the regular one, so I got medium because I assumed that all air conditioners in life are all the same size, and medium just refers to, like – the motion of the ocean,
sure.
Like your tush, like, you know, what are you going to do with that? Like maybe more pushing of the air than other stuff. And I don't know that that is true because the box was huge and I opened the box. I didn't measure it. Do I have a measuring tape thanks to Studio Piccolo? I do. Have I used it? I have not. That is not my journey. So I tried holding up my arm. But then I kept forgetting, like, and then my hands too, where you like hold up both hands to try to measure something. But then I would forget how wide it was when I held it up to the window. Anyway, I don't know what this thing is. It's a tragedy.
This is great content too. I think you should put your phone on a stand and just live stream trying to put the air conditioner together.
You know what? And all of their ads are like, this is so easy.
I'm looking at the website right now. It looks like a breeze. It looks like it's pretty easy.
I mean, that's like literally their marketing is like, this is a breeze. And then I opened the box like it. They did everything in a very organized, efficient fashion. But I get very tired when I think about having to do things that I don't want to do. Mm-hmm. And the extreme exhaustion that took over when this fucking box arrived. And the AC, the medium looks huge. And I just want to know, like, can you maybe squeeze, is there like a Spanx for an air conditioning out? Like, can I squeeze this thing into the little window that it's supposed to go in? I don't know. This will be interesting.
This will be interesting because I don't know the size of the window. So I'm looking at their website right now. This is going to be an adventure. I'm going to be optimistic and say that it's going to fit. But we shall see.
It looks big. It looks like the temps this week in New York are not fucking around. Not that I've ever been outside. Yeah. I'm never going outside ever again. Mm-mm.
But it looks intense. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen for me. Pray for me on this journey.
Okay.
BCC, my super, who's 100% going to install it for me. Who are we kidding? I texted him. I said, darling, I need some help. Please help me. And it says, by the way, it's super easy. But then it's like on the instructions, which I almost looked at, except the cover says like, you need someone to help you. I was like, well, game over.
Oh, it's a two. Is it? Did they say it's a two person task?
Yeah, but they also said that, like, you need a second person to, like, lift it. And I just kind of kicked it up a couple flights.
Oh, okay.
I'm not responsible. Well, where's the AC for dumb people who don't want to better their lives? Like, where's the AC for people who don't want to learn how to do things?
Okay,
like,
so that AC, what you're describing is when you fill a cooler with ice and you put a box fan over it. That's a short-term solution. But it works.
I have to get a box fan because who's going to spend $30 to make my life? I would rather just stay in my bedroom, which is always icy cold.
Just lay on the bathroom floor and just don't go outside. Wait for a couple of months.
This is what I'm saying. Yeah. I think that like strategically makes a lot of sense. Just have just like literally don't use the majority of the apartment and just wait, and eventually it'll be fall. Yeah. I think that like genuinely makes sense.
It's a strategy.
Thank you. Listen, thinking strategically, there is so much that has happened on social casting changes, people losing their fucking minds,
yep.
Let alone the content that we're getting. Can I just get a sense of your reaction to the alleged confirmed news that Tamara's coming back, noting, by the way, that she's going on Watch What Happens Tonight with Vicky, so who even knows if this will be outdated when the ep goes up, but...
Few things enrage me to the point of wanting to like slap somebody around. Ooh. But one of the things that does enrage me is every few weeks this happens. We get some random rumor saying so-and-so is cast on this or so-and-so is cast on that. And it's a whole kerfluffle. And people come out saying yay or nay, yay or nay, yay or nay. And then someone comes in and says, you guys are dumb. That's not even happening. No one's casting. And I'm like, this is nonsense. There are other things. There's so many things to focus on. I hate those rumors so much. I'm like, just wait. It'll all, you know, the dust will settle at some point. But this happens all the time. Now, Tamara's whole thing, I am of the camp that this is kind of like fake outrage that Jill didn't leak anything, but this was a way of just like, you know, heating up social media and starting a war and getting it, you know, attention, because that rumor had been out for a while, a couple of days. And Jill just kind of like, first of all, nobody's watching Jill's stories and like taking her as the word on what's happening with Bravo. So to say then to yell all over social media and be like, Jill, you ruined it. And it's like, oh, Jill knew something. Jill had the scoop. I can see we disagree about that.
I'm giving a little bit of an eye just because. So Jill took to the subscribers only route of her Instagram, which did you know that was a thing? I just learned about it. I don't know what the difference is between subscribers and close friends. I don't use close friends because I'm just not smart enough. I'm too lazy.
I think subscribers are close friends that pay you. Okay.
Yeah. Well, Jill had her luxury luncheon this weekend in Southampton. I was supposed to attend. I was not able to, but it looked phenomenal. So she said as a quick sort of one-off, I guess, but she did put it to her subscribers.
Yeah.
She said something along the lines of like, Tamara was asked back, my friend Vicky, who was at the luncheon where Jill was posting this video, is upset. She found out yesterday that she was let go. Sidebar, I don't know what it means to be let go from a job you haven't
didn't have anyway.
Held, but okay.
Like getting fired on your day off, like Friday.
Right. Yeah. And then Tamara took to stories and said, what, like you're thirsty?
Yeah, Jill called her, oh gosh, F off, you're thirsty B, the whole thing.
Right. And then Jill and Allie both took to their social and was like, this isn't essentially Jill's fault. It was just something that she read.
Yeah.
But the way that she positioned it and the way that she told her subscribers, like, had she not clarified, she had just read this stuff. Jill clarifying and being like, I was just referencing stuff that I read online doesn't make any sense to me when you're saying it only to subscribers and you're intimating that Vicky's upset because you spoke to Vicky,
who you are with at your event.
Like, yeah, that's true.
That's where it gets muddled, and I'm a little Team Tamara on this, you know?
The part that I was not aware of was that that Vicky was at her event. And so, mm-hmm. you know, Vicky could have been the origin of it, but it had been out. So right. I don't know. Either way, I mean, I feel like there's no such thing as negative press with Housewives. Mm. So then to make it a thing and to go on and yell at Jill only makes people pay more attention to it. So I don't know. I don't know. Either way, it's irritating.
But how do you feel about the news itself?
About her joining pretending, again?
Yeah, like let's assuming that it is correct. Tamara's back. We know because they've confirmed that Noella and Dr. Jen are gone. How do you feel about Tamara's alleged return to Orange County?
Well, I mean, those were golden years. And I think they're probably just trying to recapture a little bit of the magic. You know, they tried it with Heather. Mm-hmm. Whether or not that worked, I don't know. To me, I wasn't like, oh, I definitely want to watch OC this week because Heather's on. Like, that didn't cross my mind. So, you know, maybe Tamara will shake it up a little bit. I mean, she knows this forward and backward. She might bring a little bit more entertainment than the show has had because it's so hard now, and I know we've talked about this, but like we've entered into a new generation of housewife who grew up watching Housewives. Mm. And so for someone like a Noella to join and they're making moves, but you know the playbook and you know that they know the playbook. And so it doesn't feel necessarily always real or authentic, you know, to go on camera next to a river and scream, you know, things like that. So maybe, you know, Tamara, OG, we'll spice it up a bit. What are your thoughts? Are you excited about it?
It makes me wonder what it takes, honestly, because we have a sense of what Tamara's going to give us. I think she's like pretty dependable in what she does and how she feels. You know, that's the joy of also her saying very publicly on various press outlets, including her podcast, I believe, but certainly on Jeff Lewis, that, you know, she's pissed at Heather and feels like Heather stood in the way of her returning even earlier and maybe like manipulated people into,
I believe it,
saying that Tamara wasn't appropriate because of her pod and XYZ. But you have a sense of what Tamara's going to do. And she's left us little like Blue's Clues of like, this is who I'm going to go after. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to repair with Shannon, XYZ. I wonder, though, is it possible to have a first season housewife who's really acting as a first season housewife? Mm. You know, like, because the ingredients have changed, because the instruction manual is in many ways so clear, like, what does it take for a first season housewife to get a second season?
Mm. It's interesting. Now, like, something I noticed last week's Atlanta, you know, they had Lisa Wu, and she was season one, and she came in hot, and I almost like did, first of all, I didn't recognize her. I was like, who is this yelling? I was like, oh my gosh, that's season one, Lisa. So I'm thinking to myself, watching her, either this is truly who you are, which is why you're like perfect Real Housewives material, or you're bringing your A game with all guns firing to this dinner because, you know, you could get recast. I don't know. So I think, you know, Tamara went and she did the podcast. And this is the part I find really interesting, Sarah. What is going to happen to their podcast now? Is she going to be able to still do a podcast as a live Real Housewife? I don't think anyone has ever. No, because the two housewives from Potomac have a podcast going while they're on the show.
Yeah, and Heather Dubrow has one. I mean, and Melissa Gorga has one. There are a bunch of housewives with pods.
They just talk about housewife stuff, though? Because Teddy and Tamara's one is just talking about like Bravo and Housewives, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't know. Yeah, because I don't think that Giselle's and Robin's is specifically about Housewives.
I don't think it is.
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
And then Heather's, I don't think, is just Housewives stuff. It's like random things.
Right, like her life.
Yeah, so that's what I wonder about, because they started it like something, the tea with the two T's. I don't know. And so I'm like, how can you still be doing that when you are on the show? Yeah.
I mean, I think it gets into what kind of pod is it? Like, I do think it sounds like it's a little bit of a recap pod as well as like a vessel of manipulation when it comes to Teddy Joe.
I literally just took a drink of water. Thank you.
I mean, I'm all right, but like it's Teddy Joe's price of admission to be Kyle's honorary but maybe truest sister is to just absolutely defend whatever she or anyone else in the alliance does because yeah. Teddy has low self-esteem. Like, I don't even think it's like to get back on the show. I just don't think Teddy is comfortable having an opinion if it in any way holds her friends accountable, which is why Absolutely. She's in the Fox Force. She's like Absolutely. A perfect member of it because yep. she's so full of shit. But when it comes to the pod, I'm not sure. But the Lisa Wu mention is interesting because what's the difference between someone who hasn't been on the show in a while wanting to come back on the show and make a splash? Like, what happens if that is the – how do you define or determine if that is the result of Lisa Wu catching up to what Housewives has become versus that just being who Lisa Wu is now?
I don't know.
You know, because you can apply that question to Noella, too. Mm-hmm. And I guess Dr. Jen, who no one cares about. I mean, truly. But, like, how do you know from someone who you haven't seen in a long time or have never met before, what's the metric of determining whether or not this is, like, performative for the show versus your personality is just performative plus?
I feel like the only person who really knows that besides Lisa Wu is, you know, Sheree. I feel like your close friends know yeah. when you're like putting on or if that's really who you are. Like my circle would know what would really make me angry. And it's sometimes we can tell as an audience, like what is fake outrage and what isn't. But I feel like some of the producers and people who work on the show, the magic happens when they can get real, true, you know, emotions and thoughts. And that's missing on a lot of different, you know, casting choices these days.
I mean, and the thing, 100%, and the thing with Noella is, like, she came off as sort of play acting for the camera.
Yeah.
Like, there are, I think Emily raised genuine questions about what the fuck was going on with the divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Did Noella know? There's aspects of that that rang as false to me. But I do think something happened with Heather and production. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
I think so too.
Right? Like, Noella was called this, like, sort of maybe false personality mm-hmm. in some ways where it felt very performative. But also, what happens when that person who you're saying things, you know, who's coming across as somewhat false says things that no one else is willing to say
Absolutely.
That seem somewhat true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I completely believed her about that. Because it just seemed like something Heather would do. And I really wish I had just listened to Jeff Lewis because he called it a long time ago. And people are playing that clip, you know, again these days. But I remember I was watching that Watch What Happens Live, live in real time when he said that. And I was like, what? Really? And he was, I'm sure he was right. Like, I'm team Jeff on this one.
Yeah, and I've been watching so many clips of Flipping Out recently and also Jeff Lewis live. I, like, can't get over it, even
he's
though
amazing.
He's so complicated. He's, like, truly so deeply toxic as a person. But he did call Heather Dubrow as being kind of a piece of shit.
Yeah, which he's another one who has problems himself, but I don't think he would have any reason to go off and be angry and really tell us what he thinks about someone. So I'm going to say, okay, I think he's probably being really honest right there.
Yeah, and you know who that actually reminds me of? And forgive me for this comparison, but it is a little reminiscent of what Brandi Glanville is doing.
I almost said it.
Trip.
I
it's
know.
A little bit, don't you think?
Yep, it is. Yeah.
How would you characterize her mission or behavior, which I think are two different things, on the second season of Girls Trip?
So to me, her emotional state, and I don't know if she's like imbibing the whole time, every time mm-hmm. we see her in an altercation. I don't know what her deal is, but when she fights like a middle schooler.
Ooh.
Every single time. She mm-hmm. fights in a way that isn't even really a challenge. It's just mean every single time. Mm-hmm. So that can be entertaining, you know, to a point, but obviously, like, she reached the end of that path with, mm-hmm. you know, being cast on a show. And I think she could be great, but she reverts back to this just horrible way of feeling like this. I'm really going to tell her now because I'm going to call her out on, I'm just going to start cursing and I'm going to start calling her out on, you know, physical attributes. And just like, you've lost. So that's kind of my take on it. Like, she could be great. So close, but not there.
And yet she's saying things to Dorinda, like even in the little quasi flashback of last week's episode, when she said something to Dorinda that I missed the first time I watched it. And I just like quasi rewatched before we started recording. And it was something along the lines of like directly referencing Dorinda's behavior on this trip and saying, you are making mistakes now that will determine your potential path forward to New York, and you're not helping yourself. Like,
yeah,
you're,
I mean, doing, you said it way better.
That kept me from my job.
Yep. You said it way better than she did. I think it was something like, if you keep acting like this, they're going to keep you on pause forever.
How do we make sense of Dorinda's defensiveness of even that kind of guidance?
You know, Dorinda's such an interesting one to me. And I told somebody in my DMs the other day, like, oh, I just get filled with such excitement when Dorinda starts fighting with someone. Like when she was going off about the cupcake in their room, there's no talking to her. And you just have to let it, like a toy that you've wound up, just let it keep doing its little thing and stomping its feet and whatever until it winds down. Don't get in its way. Don't try to bring logic into the situation. Like, but ma'am, you boxed a cupcake and put it in my room.
Right.
Like, don't. Literally. Just don't. Just say, okay, sets. You're right. Sounds great, and move on. But no one ever does that. They poke her while she's already going off. And it is extremely amusing to me because nobody fights meaner than Dorinda when she's mad. She's so mean. I would never want to fight with her. I'd just be like, you're right, and walk away.
But it's like that at a certain point there, what's the difference between provoking someone and trying to defend yourself? Like, at what point are these women allowed to say, the way that you're treating me is unacceptable? Dorinda then mimicked that when Tamara was crying, she mocked cried. Like, are we even watching?
I know. But here's what's so, you're really stuck when you're fighting with Dorinda at Bluestone Manor, okay? And that's what I'm talking about too. You're not going to win with this woman in her own house, all right? It doesn't matter that was the cupcake a test? I thought about this, Sarah, for probably 2 days straight. I would just be driving my car and be like, but she gave them a cupcake.
Okay, but what does winning mean to Dorinda?
No one challenging her, I think. And thinking that she's, you know, the best hostess that ever was, and she made it nice, and we had a wonderful time, and da-da-da, thank you so much.
Do you think it's really about being seen as the best hostess for her? It could be.
I think she's got a brand now, and she likes it, right? It's like certain things were brought to her attention, you know, once a show aired, and she identified with it. Like, look, if a Real Housewife starts to make their own merch, I always find that very interesting because that means they are connecting with something that the fans liked and they want to keep that going. And so she has the whole I made it nice thing. She sells the like aprons and the mugs and whatever. And so she likes that. And she talks about, you know, her history of like living abroad, and they would have great parties, and she bought this estate. She likes to host. She likes to do that. And that's great. So I think for them to challenge her at all on anything in that realm, she was just going to go off. And she just doesn't have any boundaries. Cause what I found super interesting too was the first night when they had the whole vaccination kerfluffle and she went off on Vicky, and I was like wiping tears of joy. I loved it so much because I just love when Dorinda goes off, number one, but then to go off on Vicky and calling her stupid was amazing for the vaccination stuff. And that was just great TV. But then as soon as she's done yelling, she always feels really bad. And she's like, I want you to feel comfortable in my home. It's a blessing to have you all here. And I think she truly feels that way. But when she pops off. And it's just, you get her raw Dorinda when she's mad.
That's such a good point. You know, with this sort of just occurred to me while you were talking. I don't think I have said this on an episode of Andu's Girls yet. I don't know that I've considered it. But for Dorinda, so much of her anxiety over this house has been financial.
It has.
Understandably, she talks about having someone not take care of, not being there to help her and help take care of her. And when it comes to this house, I think it is, as she has said, an enormous sense of pride that she's been able to hold on to it. But I think that there's a lot of anxiety there.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of it is financial. And I wonder, when it comes to the ways that she's treating these women, connecting the dots between Dorinda being seen as a great hostess and the amount of investment in trying to monetize her brand with the aprons, with the candles, with the bourbon, with drinking out of a Bluestone Manor mug at one point. Like, how much of her anxiety about being a hostess is connected in her head to, like, if I fuck this up, I'm not going to be able to grow and monetize this brand. And so when she explodes on people, or maybe even in that confessional where she's expressing such shame about how I didn't do the job that I wanted to accomplish, I want to be seen as a hostess, I think some of that is because of that role. But I think a huge part of this, and maybe her interest in coming back, it understandably is that financial pressure that's on there, that thing that nobody's really talking about.
I'm sure. I mean, when I look at the aerial of that home and I see the entire scope of it, I can just like, just, I know the landscaping bill is probably enough to put like 10 people through college a year. Like the water bill to heat and cool that old home. What is the insulation? Like, my mind just starts going. She had a flood. She fixed that. She completely redecorated the whole thing. She's got like a Sony carpet going up the stairs. Like, I'm ticking stuff on the list. Like, this is very, very, very expensive. And so, you know, to say yes to Bravo wanting to host a Real Housewives kind of, you know, girls trip there, I'm sure she wants Bluestone Manor to live on in the Bravo sphere. And she's making it, you know, as nice as she can in order for it to keep doing that, to stay in her life and, you know, and on the show. And so it's just, it's very interesting to me, the choices that she makes, because I agree with you. I think this is a certain level of anxiety of, that's a lot for one person. I'm shocked she didn't have a house manager before this trip. She has to have somebody because she's not there all the time. So like, who's maintaining things and when it snows and all of that. So it's really interesting to me. And I would love it if, you know, she would go on and like talk about how Bluestone Manor really operates and da da da. Because she talked about the cost of heating the pool. When she said that, I was like, say less, say less. I get that this is a financial burden for you. Because let me tell you, if I'm heating the pool and I'm talking about the cost of heating the pool, then it matters to me. Because guess who else talked about the cost of heating a pool? Erica Jane in her little casita. She's like, oh no, the heat the pool is too expensive. And then someone else talked about the cost of heating a pool. It might have been Ramona. Anyway, it's fascinating. And I'm like, who's not using solar hot water heater for the pool these days? So I'm gonna throw that out there as a free idea.
But that is also the thing for the second season of Girls Trip to have gone, I think, deeper than the first, but also it's just a very, very different journey, a very different ride with very different, very, very different cast.
Yeah.
But there is a sense of like financial comfort that the first season ladies have just by the nature of the fact that most of them at that point were still employed housewives. I think Cynthia was the only exception there.
And that's a good point.
Her status was for these women who want to be back for all of the reasons. I mean, when Dorinda talks about, what was the phrase that she used that Brandy was then like, it's because you were fired from the show, when she said like she wants to still be seen, you know, spoken of and not forgotten.
She's put on pause. Yeah.
Right. Like before, like the sense of like, what does it mean to be, she doesn't want to be forgotten. And then Brandy connected the dots to like, well, it's because you're on pause. And she's like, no, that's not it. But 100% it is. To understand the financial pressures underneath that. I mean, Phaedra at one point is like, we're all wealthy women. And I'm thinking like, no, you're not. Some of you are not. Like, Brandy. Like, and that's okay. But it is also,
for a show that's all about escapism, it's like this is ostensibly supposed to be like a light and fun trip. But when you know the stress that's on some of these women to come back in the way that, you know, the financial rewards of that, mm-hmm. it does kind of change the temperature in a different way. Of course, it's going to be more chaotic and yeah. more tense.
And let me say this, too. I wonder the same thing about, you know, Dorinda as I do with Sonia, who I think, you know, is a great and a bright light and a nice comic relief on mm-hmm. on New York. And I loved that Sonia was always really honest about the townhome. And it mm-hmm. kind of reminds me of that, like, Sonia was tethered to the townhouse. Dorinda is tethered to Bluestone Manor. It represents a time in their life when things were great and they were happy and they felt
and easy,
like
easy, maybe a different kind
easy,
of ease.
And they felt like status, like I've made it because of this house, because of this townhouse, whatever. And their version of being hard up is so different from even an average American, let alone the rest of this world's opinion of what it is to be hard up. That I, you know, is Dorinda really hard up for cash, or would she just prefer to have $500,000 in her checking account and she only has $100,000? You know what I'm saying? So I don't actually truly think that there are legitimate financial hardships. I think it's just she's at a different place now than she was forever ago when she was, you know, enjoying Bluestone Manor as, you know, married to a very wealthy man who took care of everything. And so I don't think there's ever going to be a sense of ease for her because she has to do it all unless she's willing to like pay someone to really be like Bluestone Manor aficionado. I run it all. You don't have to think about a thing type situation.
Paris is always a good idea. And when I schlep on over to Europe, to my favorite city in the world, I bring with me a few important phrases that I have learned from Housewives. C'est bon, chic c'est la vie. Je m'appelle the Countess, n'est-ce pas, Luann? And while those key phrases are important when speaking to any French bravoholic, for other matters of life, that's where Rosetta Stone comes in. Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including, of course, French. It features fast language acquisition. It immerses you in so many ways. There's no English translations, so you really learn to speak, to listen, and to think in that language. It's an intuitive process. You pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. J'adore Chris Manzo. Et toi? There's a speech recognition filter which gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's convenient with desktop and app options, and it's an amazing value. Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs in life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. A steal. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, AGs can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Today. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo. And when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth. And when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me, just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon.
I don't think she has those financial resources. I think this is, you know, like this is like the whole thing with when the bubble burst and we saw all of that happen in OC and we saw that the curtains had like nothing but debt. I think that a lot of these women are so overly, and I don't know if this is a real financial term because I'll never have to learn it, but like I'll never have the resources to pretend, but like they're so overly leveraged that it's like it's not even a matter of keeping up appearances. It's a matter of like we just truly don't own this stuff. You know, like how that factors. We can talk a little maybe about like the rumors about Rinna stuff when it comes to like mortgages and whatever else. I mean, the tether that keeps you, I would think, connected to this show because of just the amount of money that it pays you. At a certain point, I would be annoyed with having to do it.
Now, here's something I was thinking about the other day. First of all, it started when I saw the, because this came from, I believe, Ronald Richards was looking up Rinna's house or something. Oh, isn't that where it came from?
I don't know.
And he saw that they owed $3.5 million on the house that Harry has had since before he and Rinna were together, which is like 35, 40 years they've had this house. Okay.
Wow.
There's two trains of thought, two ways to look at this. Number one is they're bad with money. They're in debt. They, you know, the house should have been paid off forever ago. He probably paid two nickels in a good handshake for it, whatever. Mm. Now they've leveraged it for who knows, any amount of reasons to help Amelia pay for an apartment, to invest in Rinna's lip kits. I don't know.
Or, oh, that's interesting. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Because it costs money to, you know.
Yeah, I never even thought about that. Yeah, so, our investors are like.
And it reminded me of like choices that Tom Girardi made where he had owned that house, you know, the house in question for forever. Forever. Like, I think he bought it in 68 or something for hardly anything. Hmm. And it still had a ton of mortgages on it. And if you go back and look through the history of the mortgages, he would like partially pay one off and then take out another one. And so it's either they're bad with money or they're doing a Tom Girardi where this is something I have, it's equity I own, the interest rate is low enough that I pull this money out, I live on this, and it's cheaper than. And like for tax reasons and whatever, because the government, you know, can't tax your debt, that it's a way to live. Now, I don't know enough about it. I wish I did, because this is not something they teach the proletariat. They just teach you like pay off your debts and go to work 9 to 5. But there's a whole thought process out there of the ultra wealthy living in debt perpetually because it's cheaper than spending your own money. I don't know. So that could be it. Either they're smart or they're dumb. And I don't know which one it is.
With Rinna, though, I truly couldn't know less. But, like, wouldn't it make more sense to just, like, own it in cash? Then you don't ever have these problems? Oh, I guess it's right? Because you're using it to invest in other.
Or you're using it to buy, or you're using it to buy clown shoes and purple jackets. Like, I don't know. You know?
I mean, Lord knows her publicist has to, those billable hours in the last couple weeks alone, that's got to be a mortgage's worth.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But, you know, she's a loose cannon on social media. It is sad to me that she blocks so many people. And I know
including
I said this.
Including both of us.
Including both of us. I've never tagged her. I've never commented on her page. Guess whose page I have commented on at length? Erica Jane, when I first was educating myself about the scandal. She never blocked me. But Rinna can't hack it? Misown it? I got things to say. I'm just, you know, it's disappointing.
What do you think about her? This is very much like a dibble dabble in and outside of the episodes versus IRL, which is like essentially the path that we are now on as people inside the Bravo community. Like this is what she's asking us to do. And I hate that I'm participating in it, but here we go. What do you think about her social the last couple days, even where she has said specifically, explicitly, shame on production for not giving me / my recently deceased mother more respect by focusing on the aftermath of her death?
You know, again, what's real, what's not with Rinna? It's always hard to know. And it's tough, Sarah. This is a minefield, and we can't really win unless we're willing to just go completely un-PC here. Because
go a little un-PC. Guys, save space. We save
things. Save space, guys.
Put on your big kid Rinna clown shoes.
Let me say something. I've lost a parent.
Let's just say some stuff. Oh, okay.
I've lost a parent.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you very much. And everyone, the thing that she really should be focusing on is that everyone loved her mother. She was a wonderful, you know, guest appearance where the Bravo sphere adored her. She's got a legacy now. This is another chapter in the book of her life. She was on these shows and people thought she was great. And somebody like, I hope I'm that, you know, with it and chill and fun when I'm at that age. Right. Mm-hmm. And she had amazing longevity. Amazing. Mm-hmm. So for Rinna to then say, I wish they had focused on it more, I feel like we are focusing on it. I mean, we're talking about the birds almost every episode. Hi, Lois, with the bird flying by. I got a lot of that. We looked in memoriam. There were things that flip back up on the screen of all the good times we've had. I remember them. You remember them. We were all there. We're all sad. Remember when her father passed? We were all sad about that. So I don't know. This could be grief, but I feel like Bravo did do her justice. I feel like Bravo did do Lois justice. Do you have different thoughts?
I really don't. I mean, unless Phaedra herself is coordinating the funeral, right? Which is a spinoff that I would be interested in partaking in, just even to see how, I would like to see more of that, but, unless I can't see a reason. I don't think that there's anything that Bravo has shown that would potentially elicit that kind of response. Like, it was the use of shame on you. And it's like, okay, cool. But literally, Rinna, things that you have said on social that you've attributed to the grief of your parent makes me feel very uncomfortable, because it does read as like a little bit manipulative. Because when you're putting everything in the basket of, I can't be held accountable for things I'm saying that because I was in a period of grief. It's like, but literally what? Like, what? But then I'm not seeing enough of my grief play out on camera. Yeah. I don't know. I think Bravo's responsibility is to, you know, show these women the stages of life that they're currently in, and you could make a valid argument that we have not seen it this far, as much of whatever she was feeling at that point this far, but there are also 75 episodes left in the season.
So many.
And also, like, what else do you have? Are you saying that this is the reason you don't have a storyline? Because what's been going on the last couple seasons, like, I don't, I think you probably filmed a lot, and maybe there just wasn't content that fit in the construct of this season, but when it gets into like, these are examples of why my mother's memory was disrespected and she was celebrated and Watch What Happens and you went on a trip within 24 hours. Like, I'm not understanding. I totally get that grief is, I think it's manipulative, because like, we can't even get into a conversation of the like staccato pattern of grief and the ways that people experience it differently.
Yeah.
When you're doing it through the lens of like, this is why I don't have, this is why my storyline isn't being told, because Bravo is not being disrespectful to my dead mother. Like, there's something there that is so, that it feels very strategic and manipulative, because that's the Rinna that we have experienced on social recently.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that she's not in a period of enormous grief. It doesn't mean that she doesn't have the right to be upset, but the ways that she's positioning it, especially when she's in hot water about her behavior on the show, it makes me feel very uncomfortable, which I think was probably the goal.
Yep, absolutely it was. And, you know, I think she, even with blocking half of the world, because I guess, who knows if there's people out there that forward her something. So if you say something not glowing about Rinna and she just blocks you, because a lot of my followers were like, yeah, she blocked me too. And I don't know that I ever said anything about her. I think I commented once on somebody's page. It's like, well, how is this getting bad? Is she out here actively looking at page? I don't really know. Anyway, so to me, she wasn't in a couple of episodes and people started making memes and tweets saying like, me sleeping well after not seeing Rinna for the past three episodes, things like that, enjoying that she hadn't been featured as much. And so I think this is her response to that. Not only not being seen, but people liking that she wasn't seen. And so now she brings, you know, Lois into it.
I think that's a really interesting point. And again, like, do I think that there is nuance here, regardless of whether or not it's deserved? Do I think that there is nuance in the question of like showing grief and showing your reaction to that? I don't know how many episodes she's seen, but I just think it's such a weird season so far that like why we haven't, I don't know what she filmed with production. It's like, I don't know, maybe she filmed hours and hours and hours of her family mourning and trying to move through that grief, but it just does feel very pointed and strategic the ways that she is expressing her upset with the edit, including her tweeting or putting on social something about like the fact that the show didn't show a scene that she had filmed with Sutton, where I'm like, what's the strategy here? I know that she has one.
I don't know that she does. And the thing, too, that I think is important to remember is that these are not the smartest people ever. I mean, even if they pay a PR firm, doesn't mean it's the best PR firm. So we're talking about a woman who, you know, picked out an outfit for her and her husband that had a swastika on it. So I'm always going to keep that in the back of my mind that she doesn't make the best choices. And so I personally think that she is just kind of roping wind here and looking to tell people, like, feel bad for me. I wasn't in these episodes. They didn't talk about my mother enough. I'm grieving. All of these reasons. I filmed the scene with Sutton, but they didn't show it. And a lot of people pointed out, and rightly so, look, even if they had shown the scene with Sutton, it actually would have made you look worse, because then that would have shown that you actually met with her privately and already discussed this, and then still showed up to that at her own house and called her out in front of everybody. So it doesn't, none of it made sense. I was like, why even bring that up? And if she's trying to shame Bravo producers on two fronts, on not showing enough about her mom and the passing and what her family went through, and then two, not showing the scene with Sutton, I'm like, why are you coming for Bravo producers so much? And I don't know how much you know about it. I don't really know a lot about it. But apparently there was this producer that they all loved, and he has recently stepped away, and so he'll no longer be on it. And a lot of people are saying like, oh, thank goodness he's gone, because, you know, the clique, the Fox Force 5, loved him. And so they won't be able to just like skirt through their issues anymore. Hopefully there's a new producer on who makes them actually talk about, you know, things that are happening, and doesn't give them just like the best edit ever. So I don't know. There's some weird things, I think, happening behind the scenes. I don't know why she would come for Bravo producers when she already hasn't been in a couple of episodes. I would be really nice to them at that point, because you want to be in more episodes, right?
Right. I just, like, she's very, there is a canniness to Rinna and an explosiveness too. And the explosiveness, the own it, has often worked in her favor. And it does feel like she's fallen out a little bit with the fact that she doesn't seem to be as much of a presence, which is where I wonder how much the, I was coming from a place of grief regardless of whether or not, again, that could be true in many ways, how that will factor into her seeming happy participation in the Richard sisters duel later on in the season. It's like there's usually a gleefulness with Rinna in how she fucks with people. Mm-hmm. That's even if you don't see it at the top, it's brimming below the surface. Like I see that with fucking with Sutton. And I wonder even how she will react publicly to whatever happens with Kathy and Kyle, because my guess is that on camera, she's going to have like a shit eating grin.
Absolutely. What was that scene where she and Erica looked at each other and they were just smiling? Oh, Sutton ran off crying. That's what it was. Mm. Sutton ran off crying and they both looked at each other and smirked. And I was like, oh God, this show is so toxic. Like,
I mean, there's a darkness there. So if we're not covering the sometimes exhausting level of grief or the pursuit of understanding and how a person grieves, I just don't know that Rinna would be the person whose story would be told at that level. And yet we see the level of like darkness with Rinna in many ways that does or doesn't have anything to do with Lois, because we've seen it for so many seasons where she does genuinely like to push those buttons. So it's interesting to see her pursue a narrative that is in and of itself somewhat pure in the idea of like, I want to be able to educate people about grief, which is, I think, what she's trying to say. Or at least I want to be able to share that perspective. She's just doing it in such a way. You know, I posed on Instagram, essentially, is Rinna right? And again, safe space. Is Rinna right in trying to hold production accountable for not sharing the story that she felt they should tell? And it was like overwhelming 90-91% said no. Mm. And I just think that kind of response is interesting. Like if it was another housewife saying this, would that perspective be believed, that they're really coming from the place of like this story should be told on reality TV?
That's a tough one. I think there's two factors there. One is, as you're saying, we know that Rinna is full of crap and she's lied and, you know, so many times. And then, you know, behind the scenes, like the time when she talked about Kim being near death and then gave the quizzical face. And then in her little confessional was like, I really just don't remember saying it. And we're like, what? So there's just been so many instances that you accept her for what she is and know that she's just like kind of, you know, full of crap and she's going to yell at all the housewives to get up and dance for Andy's baby shower. Like she's just on that level 10 all the time doing what's needed for the likes and the views and the audience and whatever. And then you ask yourself, but didn't they do it adequately? And so to me, they did do it adequately. So already it's a false argument in my mind because I'm like, I thought they did a nice job. And so I'm like, what are we yelling about? I'm like, oh, it's Rinna? Oh, it's Rinna yelling? So there's two factors. Like, calm down, Rinna. Like, you know, feel free to, you know, take some of that $3.5 million that you took out of the house and pay a production company to do a beautiful video about Lois and share it on social media because God knows you're on there every damn day sharing everything, every thought in your head. So feel free to do that and you do it on your own time. Share that with us if you want. What would you have liked them to make? You make it. You make a video of you and your family talking about Lois and you put it out.
And there's something to be said for the fact that Rinna felt, and this is not a critique of this. I think this is genuinely how life
unfortunately is. That's Rinna calling. She found you.
I know Rinna literally found me and her publicist is like, we blocked you, but now we want to report you. So, you know, there is, to me, a story that can be told even in how we view housewives, with the fact that like within 24 or 48 hours of her returning from, I'm assuming the funeral and everything that happened with Lois, that she went on a trip. And I think for a lot of people, you can feel rushed and pushed back to forced back to like return to work. If you don't have, if you're not afforded the time, you know, I would think a family member, a parent passes, you, especially in this country, like you're just not given the time to grieve. That's like the unfortunate nature of capitalism, is that people are often pushed back into returning to work quickly and then, you know, dealing with the fact that people may send you a condolences card, but are they really respecting the fact that maybe you're not ready to return to work? Like, that I think is an interesting conversation where I don't want to like guilt trip her for returning to work after 24 hours. Mm-hmm. I think she said or felt probably something along the lines of like, I have to return to my job, and here we are. I mean, I'm not comparing one to the other, but just saying like Dorit filmed within 24 hours of being of a violent robbery. These are not great circumstances. You might be further triggered by having to cope with this stuff on camera. But that being said, there are other housewives who have dealt with trauma and have returned. And with Dorit, we're seeing her go through her trauma responses. We're seeing her cope with it and also deal with other things and face other pressures and be judged for her behavior in many ways appropriately. And with Rinna, it's like a little bit of, there's a difference there in her feeling like, but this is the time in which I should be garnering only sympathy. And that's just not going to happen in the housewives world. A part of your job is people many months later calling you out.
Yeah. And the thing too is, and again, asterisk, I have lost a parent, and I'm not saying that you have to have lost a parent in order to have empathy for the situation, but I definitely have a different kind of, empathy for it, sympathy for it. But so first of all, that's terrible, and grief takes many forms. And, her mother was older, and I'm sure they knew this was coming. Like, again, Lois had amazing longevity. I think she was, what was she, in her 90s? I can't even remember anymore.
She was in her 90s and in excellent health. I mean, amazing. They seemingly were very lucky to have had her that long and in that good health. And
absolutely. And so she went on the trip, and she said she would have wanted me to go on the trip and have fun. And so I felt like we were all good. Like, okay, great. We're in a healthy place. I'm sure it's still devastating, but she would have wanted you to go. And so we're moving on, and we're going to enjoy the trip, and we're going to see, a nice dedication to Lois, which is great. And people are passing everywhere all around us all day long, and they will not be given a memoriam on a television show. People will not know their name or their face. So to me, I thought it was wonderful that her mother had that and that we all got to know her. And that was a great thing. So it's odd then that she would say shame on Bravo for not doing it the way she wanted to do it. And I stick to my idea now, because I really like it. Because I think if it was my parent, nobody would do a better in memoriam than me, right? So she could do that if she felt like it was something that was missing or a story was untold. But this is Rinna. This is classic Rinna to not be held accountable. And it's like, if you want to be handled with kid gloves, then, I mean, she's coming for a fight in a lot of these episodes. So I don't know why she thinks that, she would somehow be able to just do and say anything that she wants to do and say. And she prepped Diana, obviously, for this Diana v. Sutton season that we're watching, which is already just ridiculous. But I really do think that Rinna, coached Diana to come in with some like taglines and stuff to come after Sutton. It just seems too canned.
It is kind of interesting to see the parallel. I mean, a lot of people are making comparisons with like, where was your level of empathy and sympathy for Lisa Vanderpump, who lost a parent?
Absolutely.
And I think that there's validity there. And there's also the sense of like, when it came to LVP's entrance onto the show, which is a different sidebar, but like with Dorit, who obviously seemed to have the idea of what her role would be or how to be an ally to her good friend Lisa. I mean, you look at the Diana of it all, and it's like, I don't think you could coach Diana in that way because of the level of power that she just feels in her own, like, life or whatever. But there is an interesting, seemingly obvious alliance here of, like, well, was it that Diana was told Sutton was a piece of shit, and so that's why she just immediately doesn't trust her? Or
Gotta be.
Or is Lisa just seeing an in and helping further that along?
No, I mean, I think Lisa and Diana go back a long time, with the whole Room 23 book and whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that Diana, to me, has a really, really big ego. And why wouldn't she? She's had a lot of money for a long time and a circle of people around her who tell her she's great and like dust her hotel rooms and stuff. So for her, I think it would be pretty easy to come in there and be like, hey, Diana, you're so wealthy and amazing and beautiful and perfect. The audience is going to love you. And you could be so wonderful if you came in and really set Sutton straight. And oh my gosh, it'd be so great. You'd be the star of the show. So I think there's a way of doing it where you're kind of like building that ego even higher. And here's how you do it. And here are the things you could say and blah, blah, blah. So, because every single Diana scene, I'm like, she really thinks she's doing something. Like she's saying lines are a little bit off. She's trying to come for Sutton's neck and it's not really working. And we're all feeling bad for Sutton instead. And then Kyle's trying to help and Lisa's trying to help and Erica's smirking and looking at Diana's clothes. And I just feel like they all were very excited for this super wealthy woman to join and be this like star that they were going to back. And it's not working.
Do you think that Diana's watching the show?
I don't know if she can handle it. I think she's got a really, really, really thin skin. She never should have been cast, or whoever cast her probably figured out pretty quickly that she's going to be one and done, and they were fine with it. Because her going off the way she did on social media, on Philly Diva, that was shocking. I was like, you lost your cool for that? You showed your ass on social media for that? Like, that's nothing. You can't handle this. You shouldn't be on this show. You got to be able to laugh at yourself. And that is one thing that I will give credit where credit is due to, like, Dorinda and others. If you can laugh at yourself, I think you'll last a long time. If you can't laugh at yourself, like, I'm shocked Lisa Rinna has been on this long. And I don't know if she's always been this way. This might be a recent development of, like, the past 2 years when she's been backing Erica Jane, I think, or Erica Girardi can't remember her original last name.
It's fine.
But you know what I mean? I think Rinna can't handle the path she's chosen and can't handle the feedback. And it's like, if you can't handle the feedback, the solution is not to turn off the faucet of feedback. The solution is to change the behavior that people are not liking or do something else.
But I feel like that's the conflict with Dorinda right now, is that like Dorinda can't handle this. She doesn't want to know why she was put on pause, but she's obsessed with the fact that the word used was pause. Like, she doesn't want to understand the reasons that her storyline felt pretty dark, but she is obviously obsessed with the term because it gives her hope. Like, learning the lessons that she would need to learn and potentially changing her behavior might feel hopeless to her because she doesn't want to do it, but she very much wants to enforce the fact that there is hope in her potential return.
True.
Because in her eyes, she was put in a temporary timeout. Like, with the Diana stuff, nobody's going to put Diana on pause. Diana's going to walk herself like off of this show.
True.
And never come back. I don't think it's a matter of them not asking her back. I think she holds all the cards in her life, but it is kind of interesting to me to watch that final scene with Sutton, because I wonder, like, is Diana able to rewatch the Garcelle party stuff and watch that scene and think to herself, like, maybe I was wrong? Or does that video stuff just back up as evidence that in her eyes she was right and Sutton was just saying, I had two pregnancy losses, I had two miscarriages, because you're saying that you had one and I do want to one-up you? Like, in her head, is she just convinced that she's right, and no matter what is shown on TV, she will never believe anyone else's spoken intent?
I mean, I tend to lean that way for most people who live in a bubble. I would say that's probably how it's going to go, because she's got a cacophony of people around her who, you know, their livelihoods depend on her being happy. So I doubt that she's got anybody being super real with her, like, hey, you know, that's kind of just how Sutton is. And she was really just trying to connect with you, and she cut her some slack, and you guys would probably actually have a good time. Nobody is going to say that to Diana, I don't think. They're just going to be like, you did great. No, and you looked great. No, that hat fit your head perfectly. Yes. Like, it's the same stuff over and over and over again. So I think she's going to come to the reunion looking to fight and talking about Sutton, trying to one-up her. And it's just going to keep going like this. And it's classic Beverly Hills these days.
I mean, isn't that the greatest privilege at the end of the day, to never have to ever be held accountable? Mm-hmm.
It really is.
For anything.
And you're never wrong.
You're never wrong, which is why one wonders why you went on this show. But right? I guess her experience maybe her experience is that she continues to be 100% right, and anybody calling her out on social is just honestly wrong.
Okay, here's what I find fascinating. As soon as I said nobody's going to be honest with Diana, I remembered Crystal. That Crystal called her yelling is what she said and was like,
what Diana herself said.
Yes, yeah. Is what Diana herself said and was like, what did you just post? That's terrible, blah, blah, blah. And so maybe Crystal is that person. I don't know how long they've been friends. I don't know if she listens to her. She obviously listened to her about that one thing and then posted something saying, that's not what I meant, even though I capitalized it and said it to a person who had between 5 and 10 followers at the time. So
that I think you're a content creator, even though there were no other.
Yep.
Her Diana essentially saying, when I said, I forget the exact
term, it must be like hard being content, a black content creator.
Mm-hmm. To someone who hadn't posted memes before, had at that point a relatively small
brand new, she just started it that week,
and is a black woman. I mean, and yet she's surrounded by people. Isn't it? It has to be a strange experience to have the kind of pushback that Diana has received. For maybe, I mean, who knows what she's experienced, but like for maybe the first time in her adult life, aside from questions about her book, which gets into like, what is the intent of what this woman was doing?
What was the intent?
And like, how are you processing this? You know, the whole experience of being a housewife and not being particularly well liked.
Nope. No fans. I don't think there's any like, oh, Diana's the best. I haven't seen any merch. I haven't seen anything going around.
I mean, that also, though, gets into the like, it's so interesting that these are the two women who are aligned, because I think that there are strong Team Rinna supporters because she has given, you know, some great camera time in the past. But for Rinna, too, it's like you're dealing with a lot of visceral negative feedback by, I'm sure, the thousands. Mm-hmm. How do you process that? For Rinna, she's taken the route of saying that people aren't fully being given the opportunity to maybe feel empathy for her by this footage that, you know, we don't know what was filmed, but like by this footage of her exploring her grief not being shown. And with Diana, it's like, you just don't know me, and the me that you've seen, I mean, so what, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and again, it's great that she gives a lot to charity. That's the one, I think, redeeming quality. She's got massive wealth. She married well. She did a book. She's got drinks that she sells, you know, but it seems to be a lot of Barclays money that she had from her, you know, ex-husband, and I'm sure she helped him create that, because I think it's something like 90% of, you know, high achieving men have, you know, a spouse that doesn't have a job outside of the home. So they literally have somebody making their life easy. Easier. To succeed, right. To just focus on work and not have to be like, where are my socks? You know? Yeah. And that was usually the way of it. And so I don't begrudge her the money, is what I'm saying. She earned that money. I would never begrudge anyone money for helping a spouse get to a high level of achievement, because that is day in, day out work. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she gives a lot of it away. I think that's wonderful. She talked about that a few times. That's great. I saw an old clip of her. I'll have to post it, where she cut a check on an old reality show when people were raising money. She didn't even hesitate. But I think I feel like so far that's where it ends. Like, she seems to be really coming in strong with a mindset against, you know, certain castmates. She's not interested in finding middle ground. I don't know why she went to that lunch. Why go to the lunch if you're already shut down and you're not even going to listen to what she's saying to you? Just stay home.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of bad people donate a lot of money to charity.
Absolutely. Tom Girardi always cut a check without hesitation. You know, we gave over $2 million in charity last year, in case you were wondering.
Right. There's that video clip of Erica at a book signing. Like, mm-hmm. you know, obviously looking for the gratitude that mm-hmm. I'm sure she received of like, wow, how great that you're being so generous with this money that we now know you that your husband.
Yeah, the orphans didn't need it. It's good that you cut a check to politicians and, right. and charities.
That like helped your husband continue to defraud.
Yeah, so he kept his clout in LA for a little longer. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like this is I feel like if there was maybe a theme to this episode a little bit, it's like the clout chasing of yeah. housewives, like the cost of that and then like the repositioning mm-hmm. of, you know, what's left on the cutting room floor versus how am I fighting back a negative critique. I mean, it's all very murky. It's just so wild that we still have 700 episodes of Beverly Hills to go. Like, I wonder what that will reveal. I wonder how much of, like, forward thinking Rinna is doing because she knows of what is going to happen later on. Like, I wonder how much of this is just setting up a narrative that she can push on the reunion.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm going to say I'm getting really weary of watching Sutton be like this punching bag.
Oh God.
It's and so I'm starting to ask myself, like, why is Sutton on this damn show? Like on social media, she's like on a yacht in the Mediterranean. I'm like, she, like Diana, has legitimate resources, like actual deep pockets. She doesn't need the show. And she is the target for just so much hate and vitriol. Kyle grabbing her the way she grabbed her and shook her around and she held her little arms tight like she was a little kid who did something wrong. That was really hard to watch. So I don't know. I don't understand the draw for Sutton at this point, but I'm glad she's there because there's very few people who are not in the clique on the show, but it is getting difficult. And I hope the rest of the season isn't like that.
Well, the difficulty to me is like seeing Kyle posting adoring comments uh-huh. of like XOXO on Sutton's social and mm-hmm. knowing that, you know, they've repaired and it's like, okay, well, if this person has been a better friend to you than what we've seen on the show and you want to forgive them, you have every right to do that. But it makes me feel a little sad because like Kyle is not the same kind of friend
nope.
to Sutton and Garcelle that she is to these other women, exactly. regardless of whether or not they're still on the show. And it's just so apparent that you're being Sutton specifically is like, because Garcelle sees it 1,000%, that like Sutton's being manipulated. Yeah. And it's like, if you want to be mistreated by this person, you're not the first person on the face of the planet to have a friend who consistently does you wrong. Like, yeah. if you want to do that, like that's 100% your call. But like, my God, when the reunion comes around, I hope that you will be able to cite and remember the things that she did that we thought were like maybe a little bit of a violation mm-hmm. of your friendship, let alone like physical boundaries, because the way that the way that Kyle is brushing this off on social is tough. I mean, like Kyle in that weird Instagram stories apology didn't even yeah. mention the physical stuff.
Nope.
She might not even see it. I don't know that Sutton does, but a lot of us did.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hope again, when the reunion happens, I don't know, they're such good friends with each other, XYZ, quote unquote. And it's like, okay, like if you want this person to be a good friend and you believe her when she says she cares about you, okay, like you're not the person in the, like, I don't think this is like a, mm-hmm. to either of them considered like a show friendship, but it's like, okay, well, me just saying, okay, over and over again, like, okay, if this person like says she's a good friend to you and cares about you and treats you like this, and you want to accept that, okay, like, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's up to you.
It's beyond toxic. And that's why I really did enjoy, oh gosh, there was a video that was put out too, but I'll find it. Even last season. Do you remember last season when Sutton talked to Kyle in like a little garden area behind one of their houses? I can't remember who it was. And she told her a couple of things. Kyle just takes anything Sutton says to her and brings it back to the clique and kind of half tells it or tells it with attitude. And so then they just get more and more fired up against mm-hmm. Sutton. And I don't know. I just don't think she's a real friend. It was DJ Richie's guy. That's who made it. He made the whole like toxic friendship.
Yay, Richie. Video.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so true. And I keep tagging her. Sutton, she's one of the few housewives that I'm like tagging because I just get so frustrated with her that she seems like she's one of those friends you would have, like you're saying, that just keeps going back and maintaining a relationship that you see is doing them nothing but harm. And it's really, really hard to watch. And anytime that I would write on my stories, like, Kyle is not your friend. She's taking everything you say back to her little friend group so that they can pick it apart and use it as a reason to attack you the next time you're all together. Stop doing this. And Sutton just kept filming with her one-on-one, kept filming with her one-on-one. It would just happen so many times in a row. So I don't know. That's getting old for me.
I mean, it's the difference between mutual affection and mutual respect.
Yeah.
And it just feels like this woman is not respecting you, or at least she knows that she can manipulate the things that you say. Are you comfortable with that? Maybe you are. Maybe like you are understanding the game and how it's being played.
Maybe.
And maybe like you guys are winking at each other. It just doesn't come across that way from Sutton's reactions.
No.
And I think that's why it's helpful that there has been a little bit of a wave of critique against Kyle, because I think that's honestly more interesting. And I'm curious to see what Sutton will reference at the reunion and if her voice will break through, because so often Kyle manipulates, even holding herself accountable by like joking about how hard it is to apologize to Sutton. I mean, it's why on Atlanta this week, I really appreciated Kenya at the end of the episode.
Me too.
Just saying to Marlo, you're toxic. The way that you're speaking to me and trying to tie this stuff up with a bow is not, it's just, it's a lie. Like, if this is the way that you are friends with someone, no, of course I don't want that, because it's shitty and it's not healthy. And the way that she just said that out loud, I thought was like incredibly impressive, because to me she wasn't wrong.
Now, Kenya has annoyed the crap out of me in previous seasons. I'm adoring her this season. I'm adoring her.
I am so into her. Same. And also I do think it's like kind of funny that they're going through this Bethany Ramona kind of weird role. And guys, just hang with me a little bit there, in the sense of like Marlo being like, if you don't stay at the house, you're not allowed on the trip.
She gave her an ultimatum.
She did, which, like, sweetie, like, you're filming a cast thing, so I don't know how much of that production will push unless they think that that's super interesting. Because when Ramona invited herself to Mexico, there was this, like, awkwardness of, like, is Bethany going to invite me? And eventually she was like, it's a cast. She essentially said out loud, verbatim, except not literally verbatim, spiritual verbatim, it's a cast trip. I'm going no matter what. You're pretend hosting it, but you don't have a choice but to have me there. So I will see you in Mexico. Like, it's this sort of the same vibe, except with the introduction of, if you don't film at the house, you're not allowed to continue.
If you don't stay at the house, if you don't sleep there at night.
Right.
Yeah.
And the introduction of the kiddo to me is like, oh, maybe this is the asterisk that Kenya can get around, but also, is Marlo even in the position to make that determination?
Yeah, I watched that and I, oh God, it was good. It was really, really good. And I just felt like it was so honest and so real, and she was really talking to her. And look, here's the thing about Marlo. She's amazing TV. She was built for this, right? She's got awesome one-liners. But she does this facetious thing where she says things that you want to believe and you wish they were true, but you know she's just being full of crap to hurt Kenya. And it's so unfortunate. And she's another one of those ones who just fights dirty, cuts to the white meat every single time. Mm-hmm. The first cut out the gate, not even like a few cuts in. So that was really hard to watch, because I'm like, there's no way. There's no way to fight with Marlo, to disagree with Marlo. I think Candy might be the only one who could really connect with her on that. Mm. Maybe you're shaking your head now.
I mean, that's not going well in real time or on the show.
But it seems like Marlo's really trying to seek out something with Candy this season, because she wants to learn from her about raising kids. So she's mentioned it a couple of times. And so it seems like she's really trying to make that happen. So I feel like if anyone could talk to her this season, it might be Candy. But she's not listening to anybody when she's mad at all.
Yeah, I don't know how much of that is. I don't know how much of that is seeking. I don't know. When Marlo says that Candy hasn't been a good friend to her, and Candy's like, you haven't been a good friend to me. Like, in previous episodes, I'm not quite sure, because she's very cutthroat in how she is dragging Candy when she speaks of her to other people in confessionals. And with the Kenya stuff too, like, not to say that Marlo hasn't been mistreated by Kenya. Obviously she has, but like, Kenya's listing recent examples of things that Marlo has done, like saying she lied about being pregnant. And Marlo's reaction is like, well, I still think you were lying about being sick. Which in COVID times, when a doctor is telling you you're not allowed to film and you have your glam on because you're thinking you're going to go filming, but you're being told you can't film, to use that as like a way to call out someone's character is just so weak to me. It's like not a good argument, and yet that is the thing that Marlo's gonna reference. It just feels very cheap. It feels very cheap.
And that was a shame. That was a shame that she got so much heat for that. And it's like, I'm the first person to say, thank you. If you're not feeling well, feel free to pull the cord and say, I'm out. I'm not coming to this. I'm not going. I'm not going to expose you. I might have something. I'm like, great. Don't, I don't even care what it is or if it's 5 minutes before. To me, that's the most thoughtful thing you can do. So I don't know why they were so pressed about that, but she definitely was. And I feel like it's another situation where once Marlo has made up her mind, it's almost like the Diana thing. Like, you're just not going to be able to talk any sense to her about it. It's very, it's already biased. It's already done. And she, I don't know what she was trying to do with that ultimatum. That was the meanest thing ever. Like, well, if you don't stay there with us, then you can just go. I'm not interested in having you hang out with the girls for the rest of the trip. It really was some middle school, high school stuff yet again. And I, again, I don't think that she even has the power to do that. There's no way that they're going to not film with Kenya anymore because Marlo's upset that she's not staying at the house because she brought her child.
And just to devil's advocate for a second, for Marlo to be hosting this trip and then feel like she's being disrespected. I could understand her being like, if you're not going to play into this wink and a smile that this is my trip, you're not going to film. Like, either you play into the fact that I am the host of this trip or you're not on this trip. I'm not going to have you fuck with this. I am a first-time housewife, full-time peach holder. Regardless of what I have done to you, you're going to participate in this dynamic. You staying at another house is poking a hole in the bubble of the universe that I have created with my peach, of the fact that I am hosting. I did the fancy cars. I did this. I'm calling it a cabin in the woods, but it's like a fucking chateau.
It was a
like,
huge mansion.
It is a huge fucking mansion with trees. Like, we're not.
And a concierge. That's the most important
and
part.
And a concierge team, by the way. And so you're going to participate in this dynamic. And if you don't, then we have a problem here. So I get Marlo's frustration, but I also 1,000% get Kenya's perspective. And I do also think that the reunion is going to be a shit show because Marlo will be there the entire time and gets very cutting.
Yes.
She cannot help herself.
She cannot.
And Kenya's a trigger for her, maybe because Kenya doesn't allow her to get away with it, but she's going to be dealing with Kenya and Candy at that point. And, you know, Marlo's tough, but she's not going to have Sheree doing the giggle factory at that moment unless the women are also dragging Sheree for smiling and joking and some of this stuff. Like, it's going to be a different dynamic, and I would not fuck with Kenya at a reunion. Like, you can insult someone quick. You can be like an insult comic, and we get the kind of humor that that is, but I would not, I don't ever bet against Kenya. And I think the way that Marlo has come at her, I don't know. I'm not sure how this is going to go.
Yeah. And I thought that was interesting too, that, that, you know, Kenya, when being poked like that, she really was just like, record scratch. You seem like you're the one that's hurt. Let's talk about this. I was like, wow, that's so aware. That's so true. Like, why is she acting this way? Why is she so mad when they ridiculed you for bringing your child before and they were all annoyed? So you did the courteous thing and got a different house. Again, all of this could have been settled with a quick text of like, hey, I'd like to come, but of course I have to bring my child slash want to bring my child. And so I'm going to not annoy you all. I'm going to get a separate, like, figure that all out before you go. But this is Real Housewives, baby. So we do it on the fly.
And the point of that is to not provide that respect. The point of it, which is, I think, why Marlo is so pissed, is because that didn't happen. She wasn't even given notice that Kenya was coming, you know, like, and then, you know, blames it on Candy. But it's like, okay, well, this person is showing up because that's the terms of her employment, but she's not going to do the thing that you want her to. And what does that mean for the show? Like, do you think that, we saw a clip, but of Kenya talking in her, I assume, other housing. I don't know that that means that she continues on the trip.
You know, if it was me, I think, or most people alive, now it's a line in the sand, and now you would find my skeleton outside that mansion. Like, now I'm not setting foot in that mansion because you've made it such a big deal, and you've tried to, like, publicly shame me for it and blah, 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 blah. So I think, and obviously I think that was Marlo's intention. I think she was just looking to, like, escalate it and push it to a breaking point, and Kenya will not break. Like, she's not breaking for you, Marlo. She's not going to do it.
It's real hard to assert power if the other participant is saying, no, thank you, I'll pass. Yeah. It's real hard because she can still assert herself, but then it's like, oop, again, poking bubbles, poking the bubble of the universe of this thing. Kenya saying, I'm not going to do it. And what do you do with that? Because it's not Drew saying that. No respect to Drew, but, like, it's someone with real power and authority in the cast who's saying, I'm not going to do it. And I think that is it's an obvious apparent trigger for Marlo. Listen, you know I die for you and your beautiful, soothing, calm app-esque voice, tenor. I'm so excited that we are going to BravoCon. I'm so excited to see you and to have some togetherness.
This shit better be fun.
It is. And to anybody, I know that they're releasing one day tickets, and to anybody thinking, we talked a little bit about this at the before recording, but you know, both of us having event backgrounds, I think it's a delight as an event consultant to have seen how successful 2019 was and what a good job they did. And so to anybody considering going, even for a day or a weekend, you're not going to regret it. It's truly, they did such a fantastic job in 2019, and I cannot imagine what they're going to do in 2022. I'm really, really excited. I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, I mean, part of the reason why I broke and got a ticket was that I had put a question out there to my followers. The pre-sale, I let that go because I did the same thing I did last time, which is I stared at it. I stared at the dollar amount.
I hear you.
And as I was squinting at the dollar amount and really thinking about worth and value and things you could do with that money, they were gone. And so I was like, okay, you can't go in there wondering if this is the right thing to do. Like, you got to go in being like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go. I'm going to take, So I put the question out after that to my followers, and I was like, hey, should I go or not? And a lot of people were like, you know, hell no, don't go. Don't, there's other things you could do with that money. Like, go live your life.
But I mean, this is living your life.
It is. It is. But then, you know, a decent amount, a good amount, it was almost 50-50. It was like 56, you know, 40, whatever. And the other half was like, no, you should go because we want to know, like, from your perspective, is it worth it? Is it fun? And some of us can't go. And so we'd be kind of like living through you if you go. And so I'm envisioning myself as an avatar, and that's how I'm going to go.
I love that. And I really, truly have to say that in 2019, we had no idea what the experience was going to be like. I really hadn't put a ton of thought into what it was going to be. Like, I didn't have, and this is no insult, but it's not like I had high expectations because we had never experienced it before. So this year I have high expectations because I know how incredible it was in 2019. And and also, you know, Brandy and so many of us are begging for a girls trip reunion. And somebody's response on social, I forget who it was like, that'll be the BravoCon panel. And I do hope that girls trip gets a reunion. I don't know that that will happen, but if not, that panel is going to be psycho. That is going to be the must do panel. That's just going to be it. It's just, that's going to be, I mean, with bated breath, it's going to be it's going to be wild.
I know.
It's going to be wild.
Yeah. Those, I mean, that blend of personalities for the Berkshires, first of all, I don't ever want to see them on a luxury vacation. Like, you know, the first group went, you know, wherever they were, Turks and Caicos, for a house that Mauricio was trying to sell. Yawn. I want to see them contained in a location.
Oh my God.
And stuck together in a house. It's like Freaky Friday. Like, you're stuck together and you have to work it out. I love it.
It's going to be, it's going to be something is what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, you know, kudos to seasons one and two for the environments that were selected. Season three, I think, is a hotel in Thailand, but I don't know if the hotel is like their landing area, maybe for COVID production, and maybe they like moved to a house. I have no idea, but, I mean, the panel is going to be just with a crowd reactions,
yeah,
and with Dorinda's, you know, participation being so, having such a split response in that, it's going to be,
yeah,
incredible. It's going to be incredible.
I hope so.
Listen, I die for you. Tell the AGs where they can follow you on social. Any deep dives you're working on?
I've got a couple in the back of my mind. I need to do a few for sure and put them out. But I am Bravo, Bravo, Ducking Bravo on Instagram and TikTok. And I've got a Twitter too that I never tweet. And I think it's called Ducking Bravo.
We think. I love that. Well, guys, you know what I do know? How much I'm obsessed with the Andy's Girls Patreon. Number one way to support the pod: you get exclusive bonus episodes, invites to special Zoom kikis, and more. Patreon.com/Andy's Girls. Follow me on social at Dame Galley. Slide into Lisa Rinna's DMs and ask her to unblock me, because I would like to see, and you as well, unblock Dame Galley and Bravo, Bravo, Ducking Bravo, because we would like to see the content and not have us it sent to us in dozens when you post something insane. Mm-hmm. And we were told that you own it, or at least you like other people to. And for us to be blocked for such innocuous reasons, I mean, we couldn't even see the apology that in some ways was directed to content creators. Mm-hmm. You blocked when you said you went too far in blocking all of us. Would love to see it. Slide into her DMs. I think she's reading all the messages. Be kind, something that she herself has never said, but we would like to say, in asking her to reinstate our status as content creators who will critique the things that we're not currently able to see. And so much more. This was a delight. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
For our little Zoom. And guys, stay cool wherever you are. Oh my God. Get that $1,300 ice delivery. Stay inside. Pump that AC. Come over to my apartment and help me install the one in my living room. And we will chat with you soon. Bye-bye. Bye.